Michelle Latimer, you are here in Inari for the first time, right?
Yes, I am.
You haven't been here in northern Finland or in Sápmi before?
I've never been, no.
Okay. So you brought a film with you, a documentary about Standing Rock, but it wasn't about Standing Rock itself. It was about a lot more. It went deeper and to the reasons why people really, what have the natives suffered, and I think it was very nice way how to tell the people how stupid the people are really, and you know, what the white people have done for the natives in America, but that wasn't just. You have done many more documentaries.
Yeah, so Rise, that you saw, the Standing Rock films, that was part of a larger 8-part, 1-hour documentary series called Rise, and it was all about indigenous resistance all over the Americas. So we traveled to Brazil, Hawaii, Apache territory in Arizona, and during that time, that year, that's when Standing Rock, the occupation, happened, and that's why we decided to make 2 films based in Standing Rock.
Mm-hmm. So how did you end up working in Vice with these documentaries?
Well, I'd been an independent filmmaker prior to this for quite some time, and I'd been working in sort of my indigenous community and looking at stories from that, and then they had heard of my work, and they contacted me and said, we have this series that we're looking at doing, and we're looking for a director and a showrunner to helm the series. So that's when I stepped in and started working on Rise.
Hmm. So what does it mean for you to if people say that you're a native filmmaker?
Well, I think it just means that it talks about where my roots are. When someone identifies you as a native filmmaker, I think it's talking about where you come from, and we have many different kinds of tribal affiliations, different First Nations in Canada, and I think, you know, knowing where you come from and your cultural history, and being able to translate that into storytelling through media. So that's what it means to me. But it also, for me, is a political statement in that it's a way to fight for our sovereignty. It's a way to fight for our land, and to educate people about the history of our people. And particularly in Canada, I feel like it's such a young country. It was only 150 years of settler colonization in Canada. This year we celebrated 150 years, and obviously Indigenous history goes far, far back, rather than much far longer back than 150 years. And I feel a lot of Canadians don't really know that history because it was erased and kept from the textbooks. When I would go to school, I wouldn't even learn about that history. So it's a way for us to remind people where they come from and what our country's been built on.
How did you grow up knowing that you're native? Like, how strong family background you have?
It's interesting you should ask that, because it was very shunned to identify as native. Even though my grandfather was a hunting fishing guide on and off reserve, he also was grew up in a French community. So he would often sort of say, I'm French. And a lot of people would hide behind their other ancestry or the other culture. And so my mother went to Catholic school, and it wasn't popular at all to say you're a native. So it was only later in my, as a child, as I was growing up, that I started to learn that we had this other background. And my mom said, well, I wanted you to have the same opportunities as other kids. But it was us kids, we call it the seventh generation, is the generation now, you know, who will bring our stories to light. And we were actually really proud of where we came from and started to identify and learn about our culture. And I guess my filmmaking has been also an awareness and an understanding and a learning of where I come from, because it was basically in some ways silenced in my family.
Mm. Mm-hmm. A lot of similar stories that we have also here in Sápmi, and like what many films here in the Skatmok has been about the residential schools and the history of that. But so how, as you as a filmmaker, what do you see, like, what are the important stories that we should tell?
You know, the thing that's interesting me recently has been the advancement of Indigenous futurisms, using the future to tell the past and using genre as a way to have be politicized. You know, I think that's really interesting. I think that a lot of our roots as Indigenous filmmakers in Canada, we come from documentary because we would give a realistic portrayal of what the past or what was happening now. But we're slowly moving away from that into more, I would say, almost sophisticated narratives that are actually hearkening back to our ancient mythologies. So stories of monsters or spirits or other worlds, dream lives. This is very, very common in our mythology. And so when you look at sort of dramatization, futurism, science fiction, magical realism, all these kinds of genres are actually quite well equipped to tell those kinds of stories. So I'm starting to see more narrative film pushing in that direction, and I'm really excited by that.
Mm. So, but have you made fiction also, or just documentaries?
I have. I've made short fiction to this point, but I'm going to do my first fiction narrative feature, hopefully this year or next. I'm writing the script as we speak.
Ah, okay. So maybe you get some more inspiration from this trip that you took here.
Oh my gosh, it's been amazing to be here. When we flew in, I grew up in a boreal forest, and so the trees remind me of home. But to come and see the cultural landscape and to see everyone practicing their culture and to see the school and the cultural center and the museum, it's just so inspiring to see that being kept alive. And now that we have planes and we have the internet, it's so much more easy to connect to other Indigenous cultures. And, you know, Yorma, the executive director, or yes, artistic director of the festival, I've known Yorma for years because he always comes to Imaginative in Toronto, which is the largest Indigenous film festival in North America. And I always see him, and he's like, you have to come to Inari one of these days. So finally I made it, and it's just been amazing. It's a dream to come here, really.
How difficult it was to make that documentary about that? Or was it something that you were a big crew making that?
It was very difficult in that it was 9 months in and out of what essentially became a war zone. So it wasn't just about going and putting on your cameras and filming, but it was also about dealing with surveillance, dealing with, one time I was leaving to get my footage back to Canada, and I was pulled over by the police and questioned for about an hour. They finally let me go, but there's always that prevailing sense of you could be arrested at any point, you could be detained, you could be questioned. And, you know, the sense of justice was sort of, it was sort of vaporous. Like, we just didn't know what to hang on to anymore, because we were seeing the United States military was essentially protecting the corporate interests of a private company, an oil company. Yeah. And so sometimes people think the police are there to protect the citizens, but that wasn't the case in Standing Rock. And so everything I knew to be true shifted. And that was a really scary place to be.
So it was pretty much like unreal also sometimes.
Yeah, unreal, but also very real. Mm. One of the sounds that I remember was constant was the sound of surveillance planes and helicopters circling the camp. And when I would go back to Canada, I would always have the sense of everything's so quiet. But I live in downtown Toronto. It's not a quiet place. Mm. And but it all of a sudden, everything is so relative. It all of a sudden felt very quiet because I was used to these planes circling constantly 24 hours a day overhead. So you'd wake up in the middle of the night and you could hear the planes above you. You know, it really gave me a sense of what it must be like for people who are living in conflict zones all over the world.
Hmm. So what do you think now, after what kind of meaning that has been with the series that you made and this documentary? Mm-hmm. What kind of effect it has been afterwards for the people who have seen that?
I think one of the biggest ways that the series impacted people is that Vice, because it's played in many countries all over the world.
Here too.
Okay, so millions of people saw Indigenous stories. And when I grew up, you didn't see Indigenous people on camera ever. No. And so to think that people outside of our own community got to know about our resistance efforts, our movements, that was incredible. And to think that so many people who were not from our community would come up to me and say, I didn't know about residential schools. I didn't know about the relocation, forced relocation. I didn't know about the Buffalo massacres. And so to know that they were learning a bit of their own history through us, as our history is theirs as well. And that kind of exchange was really powerful. I'd never really made anything that so many people had seen before. So, and then to be able I'm so proud that I got to make something indigenous. It could have been, I could have been working on, like, you know, any kind of show, but to be able to bring an indigenous story to millions and millions of people who, you know, are outside of their community, that was really powerful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been a long fight to find those platforms for distribution, you yeah. know?
And to go to that level that you really get your voice out without any censoring.
Yeah, for years I'd been told when I would go to pitch sort of a network or a broadcaster that wasn't Native, I'd been told, well, Native stories are kind of niche. They're, you know, you should really go to the Aboriginal People's Television Network. They're the kind of people that do these stories. And we don't really have an audience, a broader audience for your stories. But then when we launched on Viceland, we were one of the highest rated shows. We had, on the first day we premiered, our social media views were through the roof. And we premiered at Sundance, and in the Indie Episodics, we're the first Indigenous show to ever premiere in that program at Sundance. And I just thought everything that everyone told me is actually not true. There is an audience for this, and people do want to hear our stories. And that was really empowering.
And it seems also that, like, when talking about water protectors and water is life, that everybody is now realizing in the world that the fossil fuels and everything that they're doing now is that people should take more care about the nature. Like, how much do you think, like, how much should we have space, like, how much should we have more of this kind of possibilities to these documentaries, that it would be enough?
I think we have a lot of storytellers in all of our communities. We see it at a festival like this, we see it at Imaginative, and so those storytellers should be empowered to tell the stories they wish to tell. So documentary is one way, talking about social issues is one, but also talking about, you know, stories about mythology and stories about family and stories about culture, all of that has a place. I think there's always room for more stories. There's always room for more points of view. A story, you and I could tell the same story, but we would tell it very differently. And what I appreciate about media and film is that it's the point of view that really, the voice. And that's what makes it exciting to work in this industry, you know?
Mm. What kind of, can you tell anything about the future plans, what you have now then?
Sure, yeah. I'm working on three films. I have a film about a woman, an Indigenous woman who's spent the most time in solitary confinement of any woman in Canadian history. So I'm working on a dramatic feature based on her true story. And I'm working on two documentaries. One is a adaptation of the best-selling book, Thomas King's best-selling book, The Inconvenient Indian. So I'm adapting that, and I'll be shooting that this year. And I'm working on sort of an entitled secret project, but I can tell you this, that it looks into the American Indian movement. Mm-hmm. And so working
on that. So you got inspired by, because when you meant the documentary and you interviewed the people from AIM.
Yes, absolutely. I'm very interested to see how movements run and what have been some of the challenges to that movements have faced as they've built and grown and recruited and that kind of thing. I'm also very interested in how women fit into that and what the role of women is in our community, particularly politically.
Okay, there's a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's so great about being a filmmaker is you get to be curious. I used to be in school and I would get bored so quickly, but when we get to do our independent projects, I would get invigorated, you know, and excited. And that's what filmmaking is. You get to pick something you're interested in and curious about, and you get to 100% dive into it and explore that. And so I'm never bored. I get to meet people like you, amazing people all over the world that, you know, I wouldn't meet otherwise. And that's really exciting.
But how easy it is then to make a living with filmmaking?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's not something I've given a lot of thought to. I have this mantra, you put your head down, you do the work, and hopefully everything will be provided for. And it's worked out so far. So I don't live beyond my means. I don't live fancy. I live with what I have. And that's what's so great about our people. We've always lived with what we have, and we know how to live. And I think when you're not afraid of that, it makes you very bold, and you can take the risks that you need to take. And filmmaking is a lot about taking risks. So
thanks a lot.
Thank you. In our language, you say chimigwich, which means thank you very much.
Kiitu.
Kisu Chimegut.